You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Minutes after 9 here on a Monday. Mike McNamara with you. And Roseanne Cash joining us here. And along with the gunner. Mike, what's going on? How are you?
Roseanne Cash. Not Johnny's granddaughter or anything like that, right?
Yeah. The one and only, man. The one and only.
Wow.
Yeah, not anything like Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, but...
No, it's pretty... Johnny Cash is right up there, man.
What was that? What am I hearing? Are you in an airport?
No, I'm in. Getting my truck serviced.
Oh.
So today is its first service. You know, when you get a new car, and then you got to go in and get its first service.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's today. Big day.
Big day. It's like taking your.
I was gonna get a cake. Yeah, I was gonna get a cake for the car truck, but you know, I didn't want to go all out. So.
It's like taking your kid to the doctor for the first time.
Yep.
And
I'm looking at my big tires on my truck, too. Or I should say my normal set of tires.
Yeah, we have a friend who has like he's got a Ford F-150.
Yeah.
And he came by my house to hang out on a Saturday because his kid was playing basketball up here. And
right.
And we were watching either football or baseball or something. And nice day in Southern California, I think in the fall or winter. And so when he left, I walked outside and I noticed that he had new tires on his truck. And so
right.
I took a picture of him squatting down next to the truck, pointing at his tire.
Pointing at it.
And as soon as I posted it to this group of friends of ours, the reaction started.
Yeah, we were like, why are you putting car tires on a truck? I mean, they're little itty-bitty car tires. I'd say they're even smaller than a car. I thought they were ATV wheels.
Which he denied. He denied vehemently.
Yeah, it says all-terrain on it. So I figured ATV, the only thing was missing was the V in there, all-terrain vehicle.
Yeah. And so really...
Here, let me ask somebody. Hey, you got a second? Here, I'm going to ask a truck guy. This is a truck mechanic guy here at the truck store. That tire looks silly on that truck. Hey, you got to squint. It's really little. That looks silly, doesn't it? The tire? No. Doesn't that size comparison?
But the house a little bit smaller?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, it doesn't look completely out of the ordinary. I would say it needs to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
That's probably only 60.
But it's something you wouldn't do, right?
Not personally.
Yeah, neither would I. Okay. We were just talking on the...
I wouldn't put rims like that on a truck either.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. But he's in California.
The big problem, too, is that's a Ford.
Oh, that is a Ford. That is the second biggest problem. And he's in California.
Okay.
So there, he's like, being polite. I would personally do it. And he said, but the first thing he said, he goes, the tires are okay, but he goes, you don't put rims like that on a truck.
Man. So our buddy is now, and he's got to defend it, right? He bought them.
Yeah, he's into it. You know, probably about $6,000.
Yeah. And the first question, I think, if I recall the conversation, Montana man sees it and he goes, "Hey man, why'd you put those little tiny tires on that truck? I mean, that looks stupid." And then that created a bit of an avalanche that has not gone away since. The
so tell him what I did. I went on the internet.
Oh, yeah. This is actually amazing. Mike pings me, I think, on Saturday. Or was it last Friday or Saturday?
Yeah.
I think I can't remember which day of the
Saturday.
Week it was. It was Saturday. It was Saturday because it kind of came from out of the blue. He goes, hey, go ahead and do a search for stupid improvements to trucks. Is that what it was? What was it?
Stupid small tires. Stupid small truck rim. That's what I put.
Okay, and I kid you not. It's a white four-door F-150, just like our friends, with these small black rims and small tires. And it looks exactly like our friend's truck.
And it says, the title of the article is, Five Stupid Pickup Truck Modifications.
Yeah. Yeah, so I immediately download the picture and post it. I think I might have screenshotted it and posted it. And I said, is this your truck? And then he denied it was his. He denied it was his truck, which is the right thing to do, even if it is. But yeah, it was not. It's been a tough. You know, a few months for Luke, because I mean, it's not like his wife's going to allow him to go out and buy new wheels and new rims because we are feeding it to him, right?
Right. And that's not a good excuse.
No, you've got to have more than that. It's like saying, hey, honey, I need to go buy a new set of dress blues. Oh, really? Why?
Yeah.
Those are expensive. Those are like $600, $700? Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Well, I gained 5 pounds. get your fat ass in a sweatsuit, boy.
That's what you hear from your loving wife. Get your fat ass out of bed and go run. And oh, by the way, you just went on the Slim Fast diet, bruh. So don't look for steak or chicken anytime soon. Spending $700 because you got your fat ass. That's right. That's right. See, so yeah, you got to go a little bit further. Hold on, email. Hey Mac, I heard you talk about it recently. And it made me chuckle, but I didn't hear Mike comment on it because I don't believe he was on. It was probably during the first hour. You talked about the tyranny of the belt relative to Marine Corps dress uniforms and that no other branch of the service still has a belt. Would Mike care to comment? Yeah, Mike, I was talking about, you know, the Marine Corps knows what they're doing, right? Where do they tailor your dress blues to you?
What do you mean?
When you get your dress blues and fitted for your uniforms, your initial fit, where do they do that?
They do it at boot camp, and then they do it at, when I was an officer, then they do it at TBS.
Right. Where your ass is skinny, okay? And so.
Oh, yeah, every time.
Yeah, so there's a method, and then you've got a belt. Our uniforms have belts on our jackets, okay? And you got to be
every uniform we have is a belt.
Yeah, talk about the significance of the belt, Mike.
Okay, so the belt, as we all know, is a symbol that symbolizes masculinity, because men wear a belt. So that's just, I mean, so when you look at it, the Department of Defense, the only uniform that has a belt is the masculine service, All men, you know, where men go, so that's why we wear a belt.
And what happens when you take the belt off a uniform?
I never had that problem. The belt for me was more like, it was just there. I mean, I had it actually adjusted. So, I mean, the uniform always fit really nice. And then the belt was just kind of an afterthought, you know, like an accessory.
Okay. But generally, when you take a belt off a uniform, what happens to the people that wear that uniform?
I don't know. I don't know what you're...
I'll tell you. They get fat.
You know, I never got fat when I was a Marine, though.
No, you didn't. But, no, I'm saying the other services. When you look at the other services...
Oh, but they don't have belts.
I know, but they used to. The Army, if you look at the Army's uniforms of World War II, they were cool as shit. They had
they were a thin man's uniform. You know, you had to be
fit.
Thin.
Yeah, they had that like that. Not it wasn't the same color that our our service uniform is, but it was that dark kind of brown chocolate the coat, and they had what those kind of that tan gabardine pants. I mean, with the waist belt, the Army had they had awesome looking uniforms, and then they went to that all green nonsense with no belt. Why? So they could get fat, right? Navy, they originally had a belt. They went away from it. Why? So they could get fat. The belt, let me tell you, when you got to throw that belt on, you got to be mindful of your weight. And if guys who struggle with their weight, you know, it's like the tyranny of the belt, man. It's not a joke.
The belt that looks the cool is the Sam Brown. That looks the coolest.
That is the coolest. It is the coolest.
Are we the only guys left to wear that? That wears that?
Yeah, because nobody else even wears a belt. So I don't know what uniform that they would wear a Sam Brown with. When you see Marines,
but the Army used to have it, though, right?
Yeah, but that was back in the day when they wore that old that old tunic with the belt. That was, I mean, they had cool unis.
Yeah, they had the Ike jacket.
Yeah.
The Ike jacket, man. You had to be fit to pull off the Ike jacket.
Yeah, you could be a big fat ass with your big gut hanging in your Ike jacket.
No, because remember, the Ike jacket was waist cut. The jacket only went to your waist, and then it had buttons on the bottom. So it was, you know, it was a swimming-looking thing.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, if you watch 12 O'Clock High, that series, if you watch other World War II movies and check their uniforms out, Army had righteous-looking stuff, man. But not anymore.
Yeah, they had cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They had cool shit. The khakis.
Yep. Yep. Even when you see old Marine Corps uniforms with when we had our khaki, our summer service khaki uniform, that's a cool looking uniform too. Right?
But our uniforms haven't changed much at all. The only thing
at all.
Yeah, we had the summer khaki, like the khaki alpha.
Right. Right.
Other than that, I mean, we've had the white.
Yeah, they went away.
Which were horrible. Yeah, thank God those things went away.
Yeah.
And then we had the summer khakis. But other than that, our uniforms primarily stayed the same ever, you know, for a very, very long time.
Well, they changed.
The other services.
Yeah, we've eliminated the whites, and then when you came in the Marine Corps, as when I did, there was summer service and winter service, and you had both.
No, well, I was just getting away from that. They didn't issue me that.
Oh, they didn't? Yeah. And the winter service,
I'm
man,
not that old.
That, yeah, you got your horse blanket issued with that thing.
I did get that, yeah. I did get that.
But they, you know, and you had like a heavy overcoat. I didn't get that.
That thing was badass. I got that. That
you
was
did?
Badass.
That's a cool, well, you,
yeah.
It's an awesome.
I got that in dress blue. I got that in the dress blue too.
No.
Because I was going to go barracks duty and then I didn't go, yeah.
That's a cool look. Yeah, that was a good look. But the winter service stuff, I mean, that was heavy stuff, but that's what we wore. And so now we wear one. But the style has stayed the same, which is I think very cool. I mean, and let me tell you, there's nobody.
Go ahead and talk. I got to talk to this guy real quick.
All right. Nobody cuts a finer figure in a uniform than Marines do. It's an awesome look. And a lot of guys join because of that. Like, oh, man, I saw that uniform. I was like, man, who is that? Saw those guys come in looking squared away, all taped down.
All right, I'm back.
All right. Mike, how many guys join because of the uniform? I mean, you
did.
Let me tell you, I don't have too much luck with women, but if I throw that thing on, nothing will stop me.
No, that's just quite the opposite. I don't have any problem with women, but I throw that thing on. Man, I feel bad because I'm pulling people's wives and girlfriends, and, you know, everybody. It's just like a black hole.
It is. It's magic.
Just sucks in. Yeah, just everything. And light can't even escape my grasp.
Exactly. You throw that thing on and you walk in some place, and people look, it's like,
oh my.
Wow, who is that?
Hello.
Prince Charming. You know, it's one of the discussions I have with my sons, you know, or, you know, hey, look, understand.
You gotta,
that,
be, got to be careful, man. You just can't throw that stuff out there. I mean, that's dangerous.
Right. No, I said, look, let me tell you, here's the deal, though. Before you join the Marine Corps, you'll get a uniform that will get you laid at any wedding you ever go to. I mean, if you wear this thing and don't get laid at a wedding, you'll be the first Marine in history for that to happen to. Okay, but the other part of it is, what goes with that is they can send you to some shithole, and you'll drown in a pool of your own blood. Okay? So you really got to think about it, okay? Is the trade worth it? And so if you don't really want this experience, then don't. One of my sons is deployed, and he's telling me this hilarious story. And this is all part of the experience of one of his buddies, and they're operating out someplace in the Pacific, and they're up in helos, and it's gonna. Right, it's about a 30-minute flight, but then all of a sudden they get diverted, and now it's not a 30-minute flight. And now he's got to go take a dump, but he's in a helicopter, so there's no place to go. And so they circle for another 20 minutes, and he taps his watch, he looks at the crew chief, and kind of, you know, puts his palms in the air. But he doesn't care when they get on the deck, but he's like, needs to go to the bathroom. And so... they get diverted again, and he winds up shitting his pants, right? And like not once, but like four times as they circle. And is that a funny story? Yes. Okay. In what organization is that a funny story? Certainly isn't the Marine Corps. And then everybody finding out about it is another piece of how funny it is. And who signs up for that stuff? We do.
Yeah.
Right? What happens when you get on the ground? You go do your job.
Yeah.
You don't stop.
Let me tell you a story about blues. Let me tell you a story real quick about just blues. True story. So my cousin, actually my wife's cousin, was getting married. He's a Navy officer. And he's a F-18 pilot. That's cool.
Right.
You know? F-18 pilots are cool. But he's a Navy F-18 pilot. So he's second rate cool. He's still cool, but he's not real cool. So we get to the wedding and, you know, before the wedding, he's like, hey, I really want you to be a groomsman. And I said, Paul, Paul is the other one. Mike, I said, I don't know if that's a good idea. And he's like, no, why? And I said, because you're going to have 6 groomsmen, 5 are Navy officers, and then you're going to have me, a Marine officer. And it's going to really throw the balance of the photos off. And he's like, what? And I said, no, seriously. I mean, it's just, I've been in this situation before. Trust me, you know, pick somebody else. I'm really flattered. That's really cool. Pick another Navy guy. That way it looks better. So then we're doing the whole thing. He's like, no, really. No. I said, okay. All right, I'll do it. So we go through the thing. We do the practice. We're at the wedding. And, man, I kid you, man. I come walking out, and I got my Stan Brown, my blues, my white trousers, my cover on, my sword, you know, everything, the whole 9 yards. And the whole place is like, oh. And then we're taking pictures, and the photographer who knows shit about it, in the military, and it's some liberal photographer chick.
Right.
She's taking pictures. She's like, we need to balance this photo. And I said, and you know, the guy is Mike. What do you mean? She goes, well, you have that guy in that really sweet uniform. Just kind of, you need him in the center or like somewhere. He's going to be the focal point. But you know, I was like, hey, sorry, Mike. It just goes with the, you know, hey, it's part of being a Marine, man. It's my cross, my burden. I got to carry it, right? It sucked. But that was part of being a Marine. And it was, and I did another wedding where I, same thing, man. I was like, you know, it was all civilians. And then, hey, we really like you to wear your blues. Nah, you probably don't. No, seriously. And then I did, and it was like, I mean, like every photo. Hey, can we get that Marine guy and then the groom's family? Okay, can we get that Marine guy and the wife's family? Can we get all the bridesmaids and that Marine guy?
I mean, it was hilarious, dude.
Can we get that Marine guy and, like, all the children? Can we get that Marine guy and all the servers?
Oh, man. It was like, and I was like, hey.
And you looked at him and just said, I told you, man. This is...
I told you this is going to happen. I told you. And, you know, it's a good thing we get swords at weddings, because when you're married, you got to beat them people off, man. You got to you got to pull your sword out.
Hey.
And say, stay back.
Stay back, man.
I'm married.
I'm married
you
now.
Can't do this.
Cannot do
yeah,
this. Go.
I'm going to beat you with this.
It is hilarious. Yeah. That's the trade, okay?
That's our curse.
That's
our curse.
That.
Those. Yeah. And those that understand that, that wear that uniform, they know what I'm talking about. It's the other services that are listening right now, they're probably going to email you and say, that's bullshit, Mac. No, it's not. Because when you're wearing, could you imagine wearing dress blues with a bow tie? How stupid is that looking? Right.
Lame.
Yeah. You can't look cool in a bow tie.
Hey,
but you can't win a war in a bow tie.
But you know what? The funny part of it is that it looks good, right? Until a Marine walks in.
Until a Marine shows up, and then the whole bar just changed.
Recalculate
the bar.
and the funny part is they know it too.
Right.
Is it like Army guys will come up to you and they'll say, you know what, you guys have the coolest uniform, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, come on, man, we know.
Well, they only say that one-on-one.
Yeah. Yeah. We know. You don't think we know that? Like, no, you know.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
No, seriously, we know that. We know that, guys. Duh. What service can just pull a commercial out with a guy running around in a uniform? Not doing shit, just wearing dress blues, walking around slaying dragons in a commercial.
Yeah.
Who can pull that off? The Marine Corps.
The Army
got to talk about jobs and money and all this other travel. The Marine Corps can show a commercial with a dude in dress blues, full sword out, sticking in a dragon, and win-win.
Hey, was it you that introduced me to the dude that was in that commercial in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I think so. The black guy? Yeah.
I don't know. I walk around the corner, and he goes, hey, man, this is the dude from the commercial. This is the dude from the commercial. Like, what commercial?
The dragon commercial.
The dragon one. I'm like, oh, man, that was really cool. Did you get a lot of chicks because of that? And, you know, they're funny as hell, right? And he said loud. He goes, yeah, kind of.
I can't lie.
What was it like? What was it like? It was pretty fun making it and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, the commercials. We do good commercials. Do you have a favorite Marine Corps commercial?
I like the simple one. The parade. I like the one that they did the Eighth and I guys across America. And they're sitting there like, ch-ch-ch-ch. That one was pretty cool.
Let me tell you, our commercials are the shit. Nobody else has commercials like we do. Because
we don't talk about the tangible benefits. We don't talk about the money you're going to get. We don't talk about the travel you're going to get. All the commercials have one thing in common. It's you want a life of hell. You want a life that's going to suck. You want a life that's going to kick you down, but you're going to pull you right back up again and teach you all the good qualities of life. Then come on board, buddy. Because my favorite poster, and I'm going to try and get it from my dad while I'm up there this time. Uh-oh. He's got like the original one, man, Mac, of the Marine Corps doesn't promise you a rose garden.
I have one.
Original. No, like the 60s one.
Uh-oh.
It's the original one. Not
he has the original?
The hard, yeah, the, not the remake of it. Yeah. I had the remake. This is the hard paper, the thicker paper one.
Wow. I'll tell you what, the best, guys from Combat Camera took that, and you would see it around the Marine Corps, and they took Rose Garden out, and they put shit in it, and they produced it. And you'd walk in somebody's company CP, and you'd see this poster, we don't promise you shit. And essentially a drill instructor looking at a recruit who's trying to get over, what, the dirty name or the wall or something like that. and he does, right. And he's not helping him. He's just standing there staring at him. Maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud. I like the commercial where the dudes are running across the desert, and all you is them running.
Yeah, that was cool. They're all cool.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're all pretty cool.
I like that one, but that's the poster. Actually, no. What is it?
My dad also has another one from Vietnam. It says something about join the Marine Corps, travel to far off distant lands, meet interesting people, and kill them.
That was all.
And it says then underneath it says Vietnam.
Actually, I have that poster right here in my studio. We don't promise you a rose guard. I swear to God. We don't promise you a rose guard.
But you're the original one, though.
No, yeah. And it's a DI with his campaign cover on, and he's looking up at a recruit. And the DI's eyeballs are bugging out of his face. His skin is kind of pockmarked, the DI. And he's probably Hispanic, but he's got, like, brown leather skin. And then underneath it, it says the Marines are looking for a few good men. And it's awesome.
Yeah. But that's not the original. I'm telling you, my dad had the original. It's the harder, thicker paper. It's almost like a thin cardboard.
Right.
Like your original poster board, you know, that poster board paper.
The thing I like is we don't, you know, we've always, that's been, you know, the few, the proud, you know, maybe you could be one of us. Come on. You say those words and everybody will look at you and they'll finish them off. Maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud,
and
the Marines.
I used to love to say to Army guys, they're like, you know, the difference is, you know, like the old saying, like Ronald Reagan, you know, people can go through it their whole lives where they've made a difference in life. Marines don't have that problem. And I always said to him, you know I could have been a soldier. I could have done that. That'd have been easy. Boot camp, easy. I could have done the Army schools. I went through all those things. Those were challenging, but they weren't hard. But do they go through their life going, I wonder if I could have been a Marine. I wonder if I could have made it through boot camp.
They do.
I'm just saying. Don't know. Just
they
saying.
Do. They
you know,
do.
When you run a marathon, Mac, and you say, you know what? You don't have to sit there and go, you know, I wonder if I can run 26 miles. You just did. Okay? But if you run a half marathon, you can't walk away going, oh yeah, I can do a marathon. You can do a half a marathon. You've proven that. But I don't know. I don't know if you can do a full one.
I was surprised though that they would admit that in public. I mean, you'd be drinking.
Well, some of them do it.
I know, and they walk up to you and like, yeah, you know, my uncle was a Marine, my brother was a Marine, and I wanted to, but I was a little bit scared, man. Your boot camp's too crazy for me.
Really?
And you admit that, like, publicly to, like, not your best friends? And they were like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, no, it's funny. Let me tell you, it's a cool branch of the service, no doubt. Hold on, I got a text message for you. I joined the Marine Corps because of the poster, We Don't Promise You a Rose Garden, back on 5 October 1973.
Yeah, man.
How about that?
We don't promise you a rose guard, bitches.
Yeah. We don't have to.
Our drill instructors don't have to wear sunglasses to intimidate people.
Oh shit!
Think
man.
About that.
Yeah, all they have to do is show up.
Yeah, that guy just shows up. He walks. I mean, I remember it was a very long time afterwards. I mean, probably a corporal sergeant. Every once in a while, when I go down to the drill field and you see a drill instructor, you kind of like, whoa. And you're making sure you're like marching a little straighter, you're walking, you're a little, you know, and for the longest time. And then you realize, you know what, fuck that guy. He's the same rank as me now. But when you're a young Marine, man, you get around those guys and you shit talk all you want out of boot camp, right? You know, that guy's a punk. That guy, bitch, man. He comes back here in my face. I'll slap his shit out of him. All of a sudden, a drill sergeant walks by, and they pop straight up. Good morning, sir. I just crack up, man. Yeah, you tough guys, man. They're all the same.
It's hilarious. Honestly, it is hilarious, and it is. But I'll tell you what, it's powerful stuff. the whole legacy. I mean, you talk to anybody that's ever gone to Vietnam, Desert Storm. One thing you think about when you go the first time is, like, I don't know if I'm coming back, but that flag raising casts a long shadow. I'm not going to be a bitch. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to be a Marine. And if I die here, I die here. You have that conversation with yourself. That flag raising casts a long shadow, man, as does the whole history of the Marine Corps. And you think about it. It's like, yeah, this. And you know what I mean? When you contemplate your mortality, you know, you see guys who get killed that should never be killed. And then you see guys who don't get killed, and you're looking like, there's no way anybody should have survived that. How did that guy live with it? Mike, I over the weekend, I'd never seen this before. I saw interviews with three Japanese soldiers that survived Iwo Jima. You should hear that stuff. Holy shit.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever seen anything like that?
No, I didn't know anybody lived.
Yeah, there was, I mean, the guy that I there was about 1,000 guys they captured. But most of them went back in, and they, I mean, they went home disgraced, right? They had to live with that.
Yeah.
And these guys have come forward and said, no, I should talk about it so people know what we had to endure there. And the stories of living in those caves, flamethrowers, you know, dragging wounded guys back in there, them screaming, no food, helping wounded guys kill themselves so they wouldn't have to give them any more water. It's just horrendous. Eating ashes. There was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Eating ashes.
Like I remember reading that. I read a book that talked about eating the lava rocks. They grind them up and mix them with water. And then it would, you know, because it would settle your stomach.
Right.
And
then you just watched the turmoil that they had to deal with when they came home, and it was really interesting, and I couldn't believe it, because I, like you, was like always been interested in Iwo Jima, but I'd never seen. I've read a couple things that have been attributed to survivors, but I'd never seen one interviewed, and it was incredible to listen to how they used to fake being dead, and like they'd crawl under dead bodies and then just lay there. As they tried to move around the island after the island was quote unquote pacified. It was really crazy. And then go home and never speak about it and have it haunt you every night. Pretty amazing thing. Hold on. Email for you. I joined the Marine Corps in the early 80s because of that poster of the recon dudes on the raft in the prone
position. That's what I joined.
In the prone position.
That's the poster I remember, yeah. that's the poster that made me want to be infantry.
Oh, shit.
When my recruiter said to me, oh, you know, you got good test scores. You can be like avionics. Or they were trying to sell me something like, you know, because F-18s were just coming out.
Right.
And they were like, hey, we can make you like a radar technician on an F-18 Hornet. And I'm like, oh, no. And they're like, well, what about avionics technician? You know, there's because my recruiters were all air winger guys. They were selling me air wing jobs. And I was like, no. And that poster was right behind them. They're like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to do that. And it's the guys leaning down. They got the ropes. They got the cami on. They got the boomy covers on. And they're paddling this rubber boat in the middle of the night. I'm like, that's what I want to do. And the guys are like, no, dude, that's a shit life. That life you can never come back from. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. No. They eat MREs. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what I want to do. And they're like, no, after you eat your first one, you're never going to eat one again.
And your digestive system won't ever recover.
Yeah.
You'll be carving it out of your lower intestine for years.
Yeah, they're like, those guys carry packs, like 80-pound packs on their back up mountains. Yeah, you're selling me now. All right, that's what I want to do.
But your dad was a grunt, though. You had no choice.
Yeah, I know.
It's the way they were. You had I hate to screw the story up, but you had no choice, bro. I went in. Nobody in my family's ever been a Marine. Nobody in my family ever been an officer. I go in to see the. My first encounter with a recruiter was going to get my federal income tax forms while I'm working for Merrill Lynch. And tall black gunny standing in the doorway smoking a cigarette. I'm in my Merrill Lynch, like, dark blue suit, white shirt, red tie, right, going to get my tax forms. And he looks at me, and he goes, "Hey, man, want to join the Marine Corps?" Cool. And I'm walking by. And I said, "If I want to, who do I talk to?" He starts laughing. He goes, "I'm just messing with you, man. No need to waste my time." And I said, "No."
Uh-oh.
I said, "No, I'm serious."
Uh-oh.
He says, "Yeah, you are." I said, "I got to go get my tax forms. I'll be right back. And can you get me one of those posters?" And it was that recon poster. And he goes, "Yeah, I think I got one." And so I walk in, and he looks up, and he's smoking, and he puts a cigarette out, and he goes, "Here's a poster." And I sat down. I said, "Do I talk to you if I want to join?" He goes, "Come on, man. Guys like you don't join the Marine Corps." He said, "What do you do for a living?" I said, "I work for Merrill Lynch down the street." And he goes, "Yeah, you don't join the Marine Corps." I said, "Yeah, I'm sick of that shit." And he goes, "Are you serious? You want to talk to somebody?" And I said, "Yeah. Do I talk to you?" And he said, "No, man. You don't talk to me. You're a college graduate, right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "You play sports?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I played Division III football." And he said, "You've been captains of teams and stuff?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "How are your college grades?" I said, "They're okay. They're nothing great." He said, "Hold on." And so I don't realize that. I don't know shit, right? So now he's calling the OSO, but he wants credit for me. And, like, I don't know how that shit works. So they're negotiating, right? Like, no. This guy's going to be one of your top guys, I promise you. So now I go down to see the OSO, and he shows me a picture of an F-18 banking, the underside of an F-18 as it's banking. He goes, "How'd you like to do this for a living?" I'm like, "Yeah." I mean, like,
"Now, take pictures?" She says, "What, take pictures of jets?" "Nah, not my style, man."
I said, like, "Would they let me?" He goes, "Well, you got to pass the eyesight." And I had 20/25 vision, and they said it was 20/20. I knew they were lying. But I got to the basic school, and based on, you know, what I liked, I'm a team guy, and I was always good in that team environment. And the more I learned about the Marine Corps, and I'd read about the Marine Corps for years, but then I figured out what infantry was, and I was like, "No, that's what my dad does. He makes decisions with a small group. I know how to do that. I could do that, and I could be good at it." And so I dropped my aviation contact. And
you dropped your aerial photography of F-18 belly?
Yes.
Contract?
I did, and that's how I joined the Marine Corps.
I could have been a great photographer of jet bellies for the rest of my life.
Here's an email. "You probably had a ton of emails about the gunner's description Friday of dealing with the Iraqis and taking the money, the enemy home, and giving them money. That was great. More email. It amazes me how the gunner sounds like such a level-headed, cheerful, all-American guy. How the heck did he mentally make peace with such ridiculous policy?"
Because I'm fucking crazy. I mean, I'm not a normal person. That's why. You have normal, and then you have me. I'm not a normal person. I don't think normal. This would probably be the first time my wife would agree with me, ever. She'd say, "Well, you know what? You got a point." My mantra has always been, don't sweat shit that you have no control over, you know? You can be mad at the world. Damn it. That sucks. Yeah. At the end of the day, you're going to do it.
But I will tell you this. Mike's not a stupid guy. At the end of the day, and it's kind of interesting in light of the Me Lai stuff. At the end of the day, we are trying to win hearts and minds. We are trying to make it better. And do we do things perfect? No, but we all knew the reason why we did it, right? We knew the reason why we did it, and that was to show them the whole concept of first, do no harm. Now, it got applied where probably it shouldn't have been applied, and it was frustrating, but it was better to err on that side than it was to err on the other side. And so, and Mike's, you know, he tries to act like he's just a schmo, But Mike's a smart guy. You can tell by the shit he reads, not by really his...
I'm a schmo.
No, you like that. Yeah, that's the first great lie. I'm just an average guy. Okay.
Yeah, it's like
shut
like
the
room.
Fuck up.
Hey, guys, I'm just an average Joe. Just go ahead without me. You don't need me in this conversation.
Yeah.
And then, like, 30 seconds in, all right, idiot, this is the way we're doing it. All right? I gave you a chance. I gave you a chance. But you know what? No. Oh, you only gave us 30 seconds. Yep, that's all it took me to realize that you guys, you don't even know where you're at.
Right. And I'll tell you what, the other thing is that, you know, that's a piece of it, you know, and Mike will tell you, one of the best things we do is we medevac kids and old ladies and different people that need medical help, and we bring them to our bases, and we give them sunglasses, and we let them worship, and, you know, we send them back to their village. And then,
right.
No matter what the bad guys say about us, right? What this family will say is, yeah, well, all I know is that they saved my son's hand. They treated us both with respect. They fed us. They were nice to us, you know.
Right.
And then they brought us safely back here. So, like, if those are bad people, then I don't know why you're saying they're bad. Because it is. I mean, imagine this. Imagine being a shit farmer in Afghanistan and then getting picked up and brought to the most advanced thing you've ever seen in your life, in a hospital that's taking care of your kid, and right, Mike? You've never, and you should see these people. They're looking around; their eyes are as big as saucers. And then you have people that walk up to him like, hey, man, what's your name? And he's like, I'm blah, 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 blah. And they're like, hey, Louie, what's up? Like, I'm Mike. And then you're walking by, and then Gunner grabs you like, hey, Mike, I want you to meet Louie. Like, Louie? Yeah, yeah, his name's too long. You won't be able to pronounce it, but it's Louie. And then, like, hey, I'm going to go get you some stuff. And you go, he doesn't have anything, man. Right? And so you go, you know, somebody gets him socks, and they get him sunglasses, and they get him, you know, and now he's, like, playing on a Mac. Or something like that, that somebody says, hey, check this out. And it's just, it's like being picked up by Martians and taken into this world. And then that's one of the best things we did, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan was genuinely help people. I remember, and Mike, I don't know if you were a part of this. Were you a part of when we brought the female doctors and nurses up from Kuwait and all over the AO, and we went and we would do, like, female medical treatment shit? Were you a part of that?
In Iraq?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it might have been 1-1.
What, we had to go pick up a bunch of female nurses and doctors and drive them up?
Well, yeah. Well,
I wasn't on that mission. That sounds like a very harrowing, you know, valorous type mission. Go pick up a bunch of nurses and female doctors and drive them up here.
Exactly. But it was, and you're really worried anytime you do anything that causes people to gather that somebody's going to send a suicide bomb into the middle of it and kill everybody, right? And
right.
And so, so you're doing all the security shit and you're, you know, you're monitored during the day and you're talking to them, everything good, boys. And they're like, yeah, you know, so far so good. And then they come back and you're like, how did everything go? And the Marines that were doing the security said to me, so it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And you're like, what?
Right.
And they're like, no, these women have never seen doctors, a lot of them. Some of them have never seen a female doctor. And they were crying. And, you know, it was like stupid stuff, like stuff that can be fixed with basic medication and creams. And they were like, also, there were women who were just crying all day. It was so cool. And they're going to come back in a week with all the different prescriptions and whatnot. And then we'll go for there. But it was awesome. And you were like, wow. Wow. So I mean, there was that, like, hearts and minds stuff. And it works. And so... That was one piece of the insanity, but it's no shit, man. You took bad guys and paid them and dropped them up. Hey, see you next week, Paul.
You got to find someone who went on one of those death-defying missions to go escort the nurses and female doctors up. I want to hear how that went.
No, I swear to God, I think it was 1-1 that did it. Up in Karma. Now that I think of it, I think it was up in Karma. You had to go up Route Chicago.
Oh, a select group of them went up there?
No, they flew them into Camp Fallujah, and they were Army.
Man, that's no fun, man.
Yeah, they were Army, they were Navy, and that's what I think they had worked with, like, the village elder or something. And they said, yeah, but no male doctors can look at an Iraqi woman. Like, okay. But if you could do this, and it took them a while to put it together, but they said it was very cool. So, all interesting. I would tell you that it's, the killing aside, the whole experience is incredibly intellectually stimulating. The difference in cultures, the clashes in the country that brought you there in the first place. Is really, I mean, the problems are really interesting. And
what was wrong with the killing? Why did you say with the killing aside?
No, I'm just saying that's part of it, but don't, like, there's so much more going on there in terms of social issues. And, I mean, just, do you remember the pictures of people with their finger in that purple ink holding it up? That was an act of death.
I don't buy into that shit, though.
Why not?
I don't know. I'm not that guy.
They never voted, man.
They didn't know what the hell they were doing. They just came out of something. They got a purple stain on their finger, and they thought that was cool.
Oh.
They never had purple before. I've never seen purple on my fingers before.
Oh, so
hey,
they
smile, take a picture with
So the whole thing of we're going to get to vote and we're going to get to elect, that was over their heads?
Yeah, I think so.
You're stupid. You're stupid. Okay, we're done. How much longer? When is your truck going to be ready?
It's in the wash right now.
It's in the wash?
Yeah, they have a wash here, like a wash truck washing thing here.
Wow. It was raining.
So after they do service, I know, it was just raining, so it's a perfect day. So they have, you know, it's just like any place. You go get your service, they vacuum it out, they wash it, everything else.
Interesting. All right, man. Anything else over the weekend exciting happen to you in your life?
No. It was a very quiet Shark Week starting.
I know. My daughter was all about it.
Yeah. Shark Week.
Yeah, we had a birthday party for my oldest daughter, and she wants to go to see. What do you want for your birthday? I want Bruno Mars tickets. Okay. Well, how much are they? Like $300 a crack. Like, okay, what else do you want?
Well,
yeah. I think that whole concert stuff is bullshit. How those tickets, like, they get most of the, I don't know, this is just me. Most of the tickets for the biggest concerts, they get bought like those online services and shit like that. So like every ticket that costs like 70 or 80 bucks, by the time you get a crack at it, it's like 300 or 400 bucks. Still, so it's bullshit. Bullshit. I hate it. So anyway.
No, it's true.
Anyway.
No, it was a relaxing weekend. And I was disappointed that Michael Phelps did not get eaten by a great white shark.
How did he avoid that?
Well, it was because it was all computer animation.
What?
So they had him swim next to a computer animated shark that would simulate the same speed. So I was hoping that they somehow would put a real great white next to him and then make it go straight. And then as soon as they hit go, the shark would just literally, like, the next second turn right and then.
Yeah, some kind of like steel, like barred, you know, lanes or something that the shark couldn't get through. And then
would have lost because they would have been trying to eat the guy in the cage. It wouldn't have been sharks don't know what competitiveness is. Their competitiveness is I'm going to eat you before that other shark eats you.
But we know, they can't take a punch. When they get eaten, they don't like it. They leave. That's why, let me tell you, that's why you can't respect a great white shark. Yeah.
Well, they're not the apex predator.
Well, let me tell you, they leave. Like, why not stay and fight?
A killer whale is the apex predator of the sea here.
Yeah. Yeah. The great white is a bitch. They get eaten.
It's a food source.
Yeah. They get eaten. They leave. They leave.
Nothing eats the great killer whale. Nothing eats the killer whale.
They eat. The killer whale eats one, and the whole school left and went to Hawaii. Amazing. So
yeah. Think about this, Mac. Every living thing, everything, can be eaten by something. Humans aren't top of the food chain. Alligators can be eaten. They can be prey.
Who's at the top?
Tigers.
Who's
lions.
Everything is part of the food chain.
Except for killer whale.
We kill killer whales.
No, they're protecting them. Oh. No, I mean in the water. No, I mean we could kill everything. So that doesn't make us the top of the food. You got to do it with your hands.
Yes,
bear,
it's
mono and mono.
Now we got to go brass knuckles.
Yeah, in their environment.
Oh, now we're making up rules. Like I don't know. Part.
Well, I mean, shit. Technology. Okay. Give the killer whale a gun too, and see what happens.
He's not smart enough. That's why he winds up in a can of tuna fish.
He's actually smarter than we think.
Guess what? He's not. My daughter says that shit. Dad, dolphins are smarter than humans. Oh, really? Why is he in my tuna fish can then? Yeah.
Not a dolphin, Mac. That's tuna.
Oh.
That's a different species.
You don't think there's dolphins?
Killer whale is one of the most intelligent creatures on Earth.
I know, but why is he in my SeaWorld aquarium then? Why am I not in his SeaWorld aquarium?
Because it works that way. That's not a mark of intelligence.
What is it a mark of? It's a mark of dominance, okay? He's there for my amusement, okay? That's how you do it.
Yeah, but he's more intelligent than you.
I don't think he is.
No, he is. See, that's the problem. You're not intelligent to understand that he's more intelligent than you. I, on the other hand, I am intelligent enough to understand that they is smarter than me.
There.
Now, he can't solve a Rubik's Cube. No. And he can't solve a math problem.
Right.
But we're not talking about that type of thing.
He can't even run the remote for the TV. So how is he more intelligent? Answer, not.
And I can't do echolocation by clicking with my eyes closed in a dark room and figuring out where everything's at.
It doesn't mean he's the smartest. Look, do killer whales have the human week on their TVs? No,
they may.
They don't have TVs. How could you be
dominant?
How could you be
dominant? Is not a sign of intelligence.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Yes. Because can't be dominant if you're intelligent. If you're not intelligent,
I can find a big stupid guy that can sit on you and exert dominance by not letting you up.
Right, but you can't find a big smart stupid guy and do that. Yeah.
Sure.
No.
They're not. Not many of them around. But
okay, what's on tonight? What's the big feature on Shark Week tonight?
I didn't look at the schedule tonight.
Shit. Are you kidding me?
But it's kind of a letdown right now.
Oh, because of Michael Phelps hoax?
That, and they put together, scientists put together this plexiglass cage so they could, you know, they call it the ghost cage. And they could put it underwater so they allow to do something. You would think that six scientists who have doctorate degrees that are pretty smart guys on their own right could put together a locking mechanism. No. So this poor guy in the cage can't close the door because the plexiglass lock doesn't work. And then the guy says, it's the first time we tested this. Hey, dumbass. How'd you get a doctorate with never rehearsing anything? That's the problem in this world today.
Park University.
Reward people.
Yeah. Park University.
Yeah.
University of Phoenix online.
Yeah, that's his doctorite.
Yeah.
No wonder he But he wouldn't have heard that. Like, well, it was the first time we've ever used it. Wait a second. You didn't rehearse this? You didn't put it in a pool at least?
You should have asked him some questions like, where'd you get your degree? Park University, PhD. What'd you do before that?
Well, he didn't answer my... I
was in the Marine Corps.
I was on Twitter when they did the Shark After Dark thing.
Yeah.
And they didn't answer my Twitter stuff when I was like, ask those questions. Ask the guy where he got his degree. He's obviously not smart enough to do a rehearsal.
You are brutal. All right. No, it makes sense, though. it makes sense. If you're not going to do that stuff, then you open yourself up to that kind of abuse. And I mean, it's unfortunate when it happens, but you know what? You don't want that kind of abuse. Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Get your shit together.
Dumbass. All dumbass.
All right. All right, man. Good luck with your truck today.
Yeah. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Later. Yeah. How about that? Chatty Cathy today. You could tell he's in the mood to talk. And before I even called him, he texted me. Hey, I thought you said you were calling 807. You mean 807 or 817? I'm like, oh, here we go. It's going to be on today. That's right. Chatty Cathy joins the program. All right. On a Monday, thanks for listening. This program repeats itself momentarily, so whatever you do, do not touch that dial. Email. You two assholes are funny. The gutter is hilarious. Well done, boys. Well done. And Mac, dolphins, porpoises, and killer whales are not supposed to be in tuna fish. Oh, yeah, I know. You think the Japanese fishermen that yank in the dolphin and porpoise, you think they give a shit? Let me give you the answer to that. No. It all goes into the tonnage, boys. It all goes into the tonnage. Oh, is that a killer whale? Yeah, we just shortened the trip by about a week. Throw them down below, boys. Smile and wave. Nothing to see here. My thanks to Jarvis Lynch for coming on today. Yeah, if you're just tuned in, just don't touch the dial. Jarvis Lynch. I got a couple emails about who shits their pants. He didn't shit his pants in his dress uniform. He shit his pants in his utility uniform, zooming around being a Marine. But sometimes you shit your pants as a Marine. And when you do, you know, you shake it down your leg. And it's going to take you a while, but when you can find a moment where you can sneak off, you grab all the baby wipes you could find, because that shit's a mess, and it's down your legs now, right? You got another set of trousers, and then you need a garbage bag for your old trousers. Or you got to throw the sons of bitches away, because unless you can, like, get them in a container, you cannot be rolling around with that aroma. Yeah. You got to just throw them away. After you pull your name tape off them. Yeah, you can't leave your name tape on. So, yeah, it wasn't his dress blue uniform. Come on. Thing's magic. Nobody would defy that. Another email. Mac, get General Lynch's brother on. Company commander of Vietnam. Talked his way into the job. I want to hear from him. Yeah, the whole Vietnam thing is different. You know, if you miss Jarvis Lynch, Vietnam was no different. It had different leadership challenges, but good leaders were up to it. And shitty leaders were not. Here's one more email about it. And it's about the title of General Lynch. Pretty interesting, Mac. He called bullshit on weak leader. I think the only thing you need to hear, and I listened to your programs last week, when you hear the bullshit that Callie says, that he cared more about his men, and you hear the statement that his company commander made, that's all you need to know about them as men. They should have told the truth. They should have accepted responsibility for it. Instead, they acted like cowards, both of them. How they live with themselves today amazes me. And I read a little bit about them over the weekend, and what they do is they wrap themselves in the cloak of, it was a different war. It was Vietnam. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Thanks for having General Lynch on today. calling bullshit on them. Every war has its own uniqueness. Most wars have some level of insurgency, whether it's dealing with irregular forces in a nation or some element of it that a military deals with. It's certainly challenging. But restraining killing in combat is something that officers have to learn to do. It's not easy when everybody's blood's up. You want to kill. It's easy. But one of the smartest things you said on this program is the maximum quote. What you do in life echoes in eternity. You have to live with it. That's the reason that you keep your honor clean. It's not for the institution. Ultimately, it's for yourself. The institution benefits from strong leadership. The institution benefits from fighters who understand this. And so you do keep your honor clean. But it ought to be first and foremost taught. Pretty cool email. It ought to be first and foremost taught as an individual skill. You do it for you. Because you have to live with it. Wow. You know what? On that, boom, we're out. This program, self-generates, coming up next. Don't touch that dial.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.